Hey there, everyone. It's Justin here, and I am joined again today by Jason. How are you doing?
Hi.
A nice little soft voice to start us off here. It's awesome. Jason, who are you?
My name is Jason Parker. I'm from Texas in the U.S. and working on a small YouTube channel about magic.
Nice. Guys, I know I mentioned this in the previous episode, but again, the biggest thing that we want to be doing with these lessons for you is that we're going to be speaking naturally, meaning we're not going to be slowing down our voices. Jason and I are just going to be having a conversation like we would any other time. The important thing is that you guys are learning how to adapt to the way native speakers talk, the slang that we use. If there's any kind of hardcore slang that we do use in there, we might talk about it. But of course, everything is always going to be available and explained for you in the transcription and the additional content below. So today, guys, we want to talk to you talk together about the topic of money. And I want to start it off with quite possibly the most popular question, I think, that people ask when they talk about money. And that is, can money buy happiness? Jason, what do you think about that?
Well, I'm immediately reminded of some joke I saw online where it says, so generally, I feel that money is not the most important thing in life. I feel like your connections with people are more important, and we're all going to die someday. You can't take your money with you.
True.
But yeah. I also think of this internet joke that was saying, like, the people who say money can't buy happiness have never ridden on a jet ski.
Yes. It's very true. I was at actually an English-speaking club in Sochi, Russia. I just came from Russia to Ukraine. But last week, and they were talking about this topic, about whether or not money can buy happiness. And whether or not money can buy love. And they had these very polarizing arguments on it. They were so different from each other. So the one guy kept saying, like, yes, money can buy love, because when you have more money, you can attract better quality women, and women won't want to date a guy who doesn't have money because they'll think that he's a failure. And then, of course, other people were saying, no, you can't use money to buy love or whatnot. But I think that, similar to the idea of, you know, money buy happiness, I think that happiness, to a large extent, comes from experiences. And money can definitely buy experiences, whether it's traveling to somewhere, you know, putting you into a position where you're just, you know, having tons of fun, going to a theme park or whatever it is. So I think it's just kind of a question of, you know, obviously happiness isn't a product at a store. You can't just buy it. But if eating chocolate yet, give us 20, 30 years, science will catch up. But if you, and what I wanted to say with this was, if eating chocolate makes you happy, well, you can buy chocolate. So what do you think? Like, do you agree with that? That in that sense, money could definitely buy happiness?
So what I think about money, like my personal thoughts about can it buy happiness, is I think about this chart, this Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, like, you need to have enough money to buy food. Mm-hmm. And to have shelter. And so if you don't have enough money to buy food and shelter, then getting that money will literally buy you happiness.
Right. But buying you safety, security.
Yeah, you need those kind of base needs. But once you have that satisfied, then I think there is a very diminishing returns on money buying you happiness. But I definitely agree, like, the ability to travel, have new experiences, jet ski. But I also think that it has largely to do with your perspective and the things you've experienced in your life before. So you're always comparing your new experiences with stuff you've experienced before. And so, like, take someone like Kim Kardashian. Like, yeah. Let's say that she...
Some rich celebrity.
Yeah. She has some tragic moment when someone, like, puts a scratch on her Porsche or something like this.
Yeah.
And to her, it's very devastating, because within her normal day-to-day life, her like low and her high, her level of what's acceptable is different than a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
And so for her, like, she's experiencing real emotions of sadness because of that event. But someone else would just be happy to have a Porsche. They don't care if there's a scratch or five scratches.
So it's all relative.
Yeah, it's relative to what you get used to.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay. So what do you think, does having a lot of money make someone more attractive?
I think it's a gender thing. I think for men, yes. For women, not as much. I think that for men, it makes them more attractive because in society, men are generally attractive by certain characteristics such as strength in some sense.
Yeah.
So being a provider, having money, indicates that you're strong and you could protect a woman or provide for her or provide for a family.
Would you say for women, I think it's almost a little bit harming or damaging to their attractiveness in the sense that, you know, you talk about men who are feel intimidated by or inferior to, you know, for example, a woman who is a successful lawyer, right? If she makes a lot of money, and especially if she makes more money than him, that could even be harming or damaging to her in the sense that it may be more difficult for her to attract a guy, because a lot of guys will feel inferior to that, although they shouldn't. There's definitely people that will. So what do you think in the sense of, you know, like if women make more than men or whatnot, is that a big issue, or do you think men should make more? Or do you think that's just a totally like outdated, way too traditional conservative mindset? Or
I don't think a woman making a lot of money would make her unattractive to a man. At least that's how I feel. I kind of think that maybe if there's some man out there who's like low confidence, then maybe he could feel challenged. But I feel like in most of those cases, that wouldn't be an issue.
Okay.
Unless she was like lording it over him or something.
Lording it over him, yeah. Yeah.
But I do think that on the other hand, that a woman making a lot of money might possibly lower her attraction to a lot of men who make less money than her or equal money to her.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, right? Like some men may feel inferior, I guess, because why do you think that her attraction gets lowered to those men? Why do they find her less attractive?
Because I think generally women find men attractive who have some kind of strength, whether it's intelligence, whether it's physical strength, whether it's social connections, the ability to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the woman is making a lot of money and she sees a guy who's making, let's say for the easy example, less money than her,
yeah,
she won't view him as being strong. And she doesn't need him to provide for her or to protect her, which is some kind of like base animal thing built into us. And so if a woman's making a lot of money, let's say she's like CEO of a company, that vastly cuts out like 90% of the male population that she wouldn't consider attractive to date.
Yeah.
So it actually makes it harder for her, I think, psychologically. But I generally wouldn't mind dating a hot billionaire woman.
I don't think anybody would be too upset about having to go ride around on jet skis with a hot billionaire chick. So
that's the point I'm trying to make.
So what about the expression, money doesn't grow on trees? What does that mean? And what do you think life would be like if money did grow on trees?
Okay. Money doesn't grow on trees. I suppose that is talking about the scarcity of money, that it doesn't come easy, that you have to earn it.
Yeah.
And I don't think... if money grew on trees, then it would no longer be money, because I think by definition it has to do with scarcity of resources in our world.
It wouldn't maintain the same value it has. Yeah. Yeah,
no one would care about it anymore. It would just be like leaves on a tree. Like, you want to have some of these leaves? Yeah. And I can have that pizza? No thanks, I'll just go get my own leaves.
Exactly.
I'm gonna eat this pizza right now.
So you're saying the entire system that money is based upon, and like this bartering system, would just disappear, and our own idea of having a legal tender, you know, to trade for something just wouldn't really work anymore. So
yeah, I think by definition of our world, like, there's always scarcity of resources. I don't think we'll ever be able to solve that.
Yeah.
Because if there's something that we don't have enough of now, like let's say food or water, okay, then people want it, but let's say, and we need it,
yeah,
but let's say in the future everyone has enough food and water, okay, that's like problem solved. But people don't focus on things that are good. People focus on things that are problems that they want to increase their situation or solve. So the next thing people will be focusing on is, well, everybody doesn't have an Xbox, so like we all need Xboxes, and like I want an Xbox. So you're always focusing on there's always going to be something that there's not enough of for everyone to have.
Right.
And then that's the concept of money, is like you're trading things essentially. It's like a higher level of bartering.
Yeah. It's just a sense of, you know, if we don't have this tender anymore, then what are we going to trade with? And if we don't have a way of trading, well, then we're all kind of just screwed at that point, to be honest.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Jason. Guys, let us know down below. This is our question for you. Can money buy happiness? Okay, we talked about it a little bit, but let us know what you think about that. Can money buy happiness? Tell us in the comments below. I do think that there's lots of people who think that it can, a lot of people who think that it can't. And I think that there's a lot of good reasons for both sides of that argument. So let us know what you think down below, and we can kind of continue that discussion there with you guys. And until then, we will see you in the next podcast.
Adios.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome back into another podcast episode. This is Justin here, and I've also got my friend Jason.
Hello, everybody.
There we go. So we wanted to actually just share something with you guys today, something interesting that we came across, and that is a video about the education system actually in Finland and how it compares to education in the West. And there's some very, let's call them startling, results or surprises that they talk about with respect to the level of education in Finland for students and how it compares to the school system in the West. And so that's something that we kind of wanted to talk a little bit about today. We'll also include the link down below the podcast to the original video so you can go back and watch it yourself. It's really good. It's some really great American English with some awesome Finnish speakers that you can check out. And it's just a really interesting mini documentary on a very important issue, which of course is education and children, and as we're all growing up. Perfect. So, one of the big things that they found in this documentary was that in Finland, they've actually have students there have the highest test scores in the world. And one of the surprising things is that they actually go to school the least out of any Western country. So they have the shortest school days, just 20 hours per week in total of class, and they have the shortest school year. Another thing that they also mention is that they don't really have any homework. So they either don't give the students any homework at all, or they get about 10 to 15 minutes maximum of homework. And what they say in this is that this leads to less stress for the kids. And as a result of less stress, these kids end up doing better somehow on all of their tests and their exams. So what do you think, Jason, about, like, if you look back kind of, you know, when you went to school when you were younger, do you think that had you been given less homework, that would have somehow made you do better in school? Do you think that that's like an accurate statement?
Well, you know, it's a difficult subject. I think that you need a balance with everything, and I think that I can see their point that having more free time allows kids to be more creative and explore the world around them and be happier and more inspired and motivated to actually learn rather than being forced. But they have the results, right? So I guess their way is better, but I would think that some structure is good. Because I know that there's times if I didn't have an exam coming up, I wouldn't be doing the homework.
Yeah, true. Okay. And what do you think? Like, to me, I just don't understand how that works. Like, how, if they're going to school less, if they're getting less homework, how do you actually end up as a student, like, end up doing better on these tests? To me, it seems kind of counter-logical or counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, maybe the values they have, you know, in the country and their culture is that they want to do well in life, they want to be successful, so the kids actually understand what they need to do to grow up, and it's not being forced on them, it's just like a reasonable thing that they see, and so they're actually naturally interested in learning and getting better at different things because they want to be able to enjoy the world.
Okay. So one of the big things that they talk about in this mini documentary is that Finland completely got rid of standardized tests. And if you're not familiar what standardized tests are, those are things like in America, like the SATs, I guess, like a standardized entrance exam to university. But I think you probably in the education system as well, which has had standardized exams that they compare all of the students against, that all of these students take. And one of the things that the guy who runs the documentary says is, well, we're really just teaching kids how to take tests. And that's it. They're not really learning anything outside of that. But then they go further and they say that they don't have any multiple choice tests. And I thought that was interesting, right? Because looking back on it, you know, me, myself growing up in Canada, a lot of our tests were all very multiple choice based. Mm-hmm. And he makes the funny statement of saying, well, then how do you know what the answer is if you don't have a multiple choice test and the answer isn't one of the options written in the question? And the Finnish students respond by saying, well, you need to know what the answer is or whatnot. So what do you think about this idea of multiple choice tests? And do you think that they're just totally useless? Or do you think that there actually is some merit and value to using them?
Well, that's pretty interesting, actually, because you mentioned the idea of standardized tests, and I'd never really given much thought to that being like an evil thing, but I do hear people complaining about standardized tests more and more in the recent years. You know, I've already been educated, like I'm done with school and everything. And for me, it didn't seem like a problem at the time. But now that you consider it, yeah, it does seem like the more you try to create some standard measure for everyone, the less you have a chance to customize education for individuals. And if you think about standardizing and having multiple choice, it's very structured, and like it works great for stuff like math and the sciences. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to teach other, there's a lot of valuable life skills like business, you know, and personal skills that can't really be quantified so easily in some structured test. So I could see that if you have these multiple choice, well, on the one hand, you know, just multiple choice means you read the question and almost before or while you're even trying to formulate an answer, your eyes are already scanning over the multiple choices. Mm-hmm. So it may limit your ability for your brain to be creative on its own.
Yeah.
Without having just the answer there and you're like, oh, that's it. And life isn't multiple choice. You know, you have a problem and you have no multiple choices. You just have to think. So it is kind of training you to think in a way that's unnatural.
Right. Okay. So that's interesting, right? Like you're saying you have a problem and people say, okay, well, there might be a few different solutions, A, B, or C, but essentially it's like, okay, you have to come up with what those solutions are, mm-hmm. right? Unless you ask somebody for help who says you can do this, you can do that, or you can do that, usually you're like, okay, I got to go this way, I got to go that way. I got to make a choice and deal with the consequences of whatever that decision is. The last point I kind of want to make about this is what's the overall significance of this idea that these Finnish students go to school less and they're getting better grades than everybody else? My question is, does that mean that the US, let's say North American system of education is inherently wrong as a result? Or can we look at it and say, well, the U.S. is inventing more than any other country, is, let's say, selling more of technology and creating new things faster at a faster rate than just about any other country. So does that mean that the education system is wrong, or is it still working very well because it is producing citizens who are contributing to the maths and sciences and all the other areas or whatnot, and as a result, things are being created and being done, obviously. Finland just has a smaller population, right? Like 5 million or something, very small population. So I guess my thinking is, well, if you did transplant that system of education into America, does that mean that the rate of all these things that are being created and being done, would that be even faster? Or can we kind of just say, do we need to change something if it's working already? You know, should we, what's that expression? I can't think of, don't break it if it's not broken, or don't fix something that's not broken.
Yeah, like two eggs in the hand is worth three birds with one stone.
I'm just kidding. That's crazy.
Forget what I just said.
So yeah, I mean, that's my big question is like, if it's not broken, should we fix it? Can we even consider it to be broken?
Yeah.
You know,
they seem to have the results. So, Like, it implies that their method is the right method. But like you said, we have a lot of things being invented and successful businesses in America.
Yeah.
And maybe that's more attributable to the capitalism kind of competitive environment.
Very true. The more capitalistic environment and I guess capital and finances as the primary goal of a business. Okay, no, neat point for sure. In the end, guys, here, my question for you is, what do you think about all this? What do you think that less school is the answer? Do you think that if students went to school less, got less homework, and had more time for recreation and playing, do you think that that would lead to better scores? The fact that their brains have more time to relax, do you think that would lead to a better education system, getting rid of standardized tests? Or do you think that students on the opposite should actually go to school more? You know, like you see in other countries, like in China, they have much longer school days and do a lot more schooling. What do you guys think about that? Let us know in the comments down below. Don't forget to check out the original video. We'll put the link that there for you as well. But we're super excited to hear what your thoughts are on all of this. We'll see you next time.
Paka, paka.